third quarter. LeBron James, a shot at history.
To be able to be in the presence of such a legend and great as Kareem, it means so much to me. It's very humbling. Please give a standing ovation to the captain, please. Man, everybody that's ever been a part of this run with me the last 20 years, 20 plus years, I just want to say I thank you so much, because I wouldn't be me without y'all. All y'all help, all y'all passion, all y'all sacrifices helped me get to this point. And to the NBA, to Adam Silver, to the late, great David Stern, I thank you guys so much for allowing me to be a part of something I've always dreamed about. And I would never, ever, in a million years, dreamt this even better than what it is tonight. So, man, thank you guys.
And the Lakers lose, 133.
Couldn't have dreamt it up any better.
To the Oklahoma City Thunder.
We lost. Yet, LeBron James gets... the history-making moment. Imagine being the guy who's got to get that call right. Whew, that's going to be heard forever.
I didn't hear it.
Oh, what were you doing?
Did you stay up and watch the record-breaking?
We just played it, did we not?
I guess we did, but I was reading up on the, just a little last-second prep.
Yeah, we had some other stuff going on.
I don't know the name, to be honest.
Nonetheless, LeBron does it, and I should have... No. Well, I knew when I saw him walk into that arena last night.
Yeah, I mean, well, you should tell the story from the start, given that you were pretty confident. You were teasing this.
Yeah,
You came into the week very, very confident that LeBron would be pacing himself instead of chasing the record aggressively last night.
I said the NBA script writers
would
have seen Thursday's opportunity against Milwaukee Bucks as even more icing on the cake with the cherry on top. But then you see LeBron James walk into the arena last night in the most immaculate suit.
Yes. That might be the greatest walk-in look I've ever seen in the NBA.
People don't even look that good for their own weddings.
No.
He looked like he was going to mourn the death of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record.
Yes.
Like, goodbye, that is going to die
exactly
tonight.
Exactly what it looked like.
And it will be at the hands of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard that hundreds of his family and friends would be in attendance. And, okay, this is happening.
Yeah, I hadn't like...
Tonight's tonight.
I hadn't blindly tailed you, but I was watching your friends on Tim and Friends. Tim and Jesse talked to Dave McMenamin, who said, all of Akron is in attendance.
Yes, legitimately the entire town.
And then I saw the fit coming in. I was like, okay, I'm going the opposite way. And it was actually, plus money on 36-plus points. It was...
Wow.
I think a lot of people made money last night betting LeBron James.
There's lots to unpack with LeBron James. We'll go through the legacy discussion. We'll talk about the different eras of LeBron James. And there's some stuff that came out from last night. I don't know if you had a chance to our listeners this morning to browse social media. Some interesting camera angles of other players on the Lakers bench reacting to LeBron James. There's a lot to unpack. But let's do... the biggest Toronto sports news first.
Yes.
Well, we have some time because it's not a fully written story as well. And we will talk to John Morosi about it at 7:30 to see if there's more details. But Bo Bichette, big night for Bo's. Bo Horvat gets his first goal as an Islander on home ice. And Bo Bichette and the Blue Jays, apparently, and we're going to believe it because it's Ben Nicholson Smith, our boy, avoided arbitration by agreeing to a multi-year contract last night, confirmed by Joel Sherman that the deal will be for 3 years, and it'll buy out the remainder of Bo's arbitration years.
Yeah, I think that's a key, because we were looking at it last night, preparing for the show, and trying to wait on the details from the deal, and the only thing we knew is multi-year, right? Buying up some arb, multi-year.
Multi-year can mean many things.
What is that exactly going to mean? Yeah, is that the huge monster deal that keeps him with the Blue Jays for a long, long time, or is it just the deal that makes sure that these two parties don't fight every winter over the contract Bo Bichette will have through his arbitration years until he goes to UFA in 2026? So, if it is 3 years, which Joel Sherman says it is, we're BNS guys. We'll trust Ben Nicholson Smith and our guys here at Sportsnet. But this, I always thought, hey, if this is worth it, right? if this is worth it, we need something back in return. The Blue Jays need something back in return if they're just going to let Bo Bichette or give Bo Bichette a little bit more money through the arbitration process. Yeah, maybe a good show of faith is nice. Give a little extra. And before you guys actually sit down at the table and really negotiate a long-term deal that can be influenced by other teams that are going to have interest in Bo Bichette. But ultimately what this does, if 3 years buys up the remaining arbitration, makes it so that they're not at each other's throats every winter. And I guess gives Bo Bichette some financial security with 3 years, leading to his UFA in 2026.
So when I initially saw this, and my thoughts still this morning are that it's a win-win at the moment. And I do think that there's a lot of factors that could tilt that, obviously knowing how much this is for. Reportedly, BNS thinks it's around $33.5 million, a reasonable total, in the range of $6 million, $11 million, and then $16.5 million. So increasing amount throughout the 3 years.
So to mirror arbitration, essentially.
Right. Bo asked for $7.5 million. Jays filed at $5 million. So you're giving up a little bit there. But I think the biggest thing when you look at arbitration, you touched on it a bit there, is it is an awful process. You're going to put Bo Bichette in a room and you're going to go through reasons why he's not worth the amount of money that he thinks he's worth. This player is better. This contract is more in line with you. This is where you fell short. This is where you need to improve. And you're going to sit there with a guy that's already been rumored to have some tension with your organization, who we thought maybe not a part of the future. Is he going to play where he's playing? Should he even be a part of this team? We and Blue Jays fandom had a lot of conversations about, is he the right fit for this team moving forward? Is it Vladdy or Bo? So I think you avoid a very tumultuous offseason again and again and again. And maybe it is that goodwill and that show of faith that let's buy into right now. You have 3 years. We're not going to think anything more about, let's just give it a 3-year sample size. And yeah, you're right. At the end of this, he could just walk into free agency, but that's the risk you're taking. And
I guess,
what if we came on this morning and it was Bo Bichette signed for 8 years?
I mean, if it was a manageable price, like if you look,
see, there's these factors. Like, let's just say it was 8 years, and give me a comparable.
Well,
player.
If you look at the Atlanta Braves, they've signed a bunch of long term contracts with future star players out of arbitration that keeps them cost control forever. And you look at their books, and you're like, wow, that is immaculate. Like there are no overpays. Mm-hmm. They have financial wiggle room.
But do they have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that they also need to sign in 3 years?
Well, that's the thing, is they went out and they pretty much signed all their guys, Ronald Acuna, mm-hmm. Austin Riley. They were able to, Michael Harris recently, who just won the Rookie of the Year.
Right.
They have long-term deals with all those players. They avoided the arbitration process, but they also bought some of the UFA years, which I think is very, very important. Like if I'm classifying this as a smashing success for the Blue Jays, I think you need to buy up a UFA year, maybe at least one. Like this could work out great, but mm-hmm. I don't think it does anything other than function like the arbitration process, which is, you know, it should be a benefit to you using arbitration if you're a team, because you keep costs low on a player that could be earning a lot more. And that's like the key to sports in 2023, is paying players who have maximum impact less. Look at the Super Bowl. It's Patrick Mahomes and a cast of nobody other than Travis Kelce versus Jalen Hurts and a roster that has been bolstered at every single turn. That's the difference, right? Mm-hmm. When you have your best players earning less than they would if they were a free agent, or they had free agent status and rights and all that, then you're in a better spot. So you look at the Austin Matthews deal. Did they buy up 1 year of UFA? I can't remember now, but they didn't buy up much. Austin Matthews pretty much got everything he wanted. He got he didn't do a bridge deal per se. He got the full amount of money that he was owed, plus he got he saved 3 years of unrestricted free agency because he only signed a 5-year agreement. So that's the give and take in all this, is like, can you buy up some UFA? Can you pay a little bit more now to keep it cost controlled in years 4, 5, 6? Those are the things that they're constantly weighing. And to me, this deal is just like, okay, this is just us avoiding arbitration processes.
Well, that's what it is.
Rather
yes.
than anyone really winning or getting an advantage, or
I still think there's a win
or
here.
Picking up anything that's actually meaningful, because he was going to play for you at this amount of money anyway, unless you decide to trade him or extend him.
I think, and that's all very valid. Yes, it's nice to lock someone up long term, but we still have questions about if Bo Bichette is that guy long term. Like,
I suppose,
know he's
yeah.
an incredible baseball player and he has a bright future, but not far removed a couple months ago, did we have the conversation of, is Bo Bichette a part of this Blue Jays franchise? And maybe this is part of that as well. Like, you have him for until free agency. There could be a part in the next couple of years where we decide that, no, that's like, that's it for us. Like, if it's Vladdy or him, have we not both had the conversation that we'd rather have Vladdy? Like, that might be a real risk. I just also think it's a good look for the franchise to be extending this olive branch, in a sense, that they might do with all their other superstars as well. It's like, if they're going to have this openness to have these treatments and this discussion with star players, didn't they do this with Chapman as well? Like, avoid arbitration. Daniel, you might have to fact check me on that.
Yeah, he immediately signed a 2-year deal when he came over.
Anyway, I just think it's a better place that I feel between Bo and the organization today and last night than I have in the past.
Certainly. That's, playing
that
nice.
That is the
playing
biggest part.
Playing nice is a good thing. And I'm not into nickel and diming star players.
And that's the thing.
I don't think that's
you're
a really...
You're going to upset Bo over $2.5 million?
Well, that's what I always thought all along, though. Like, if Bo wants 7.5 right now and you want it to be 5, like, why not just give a little ground now? It's chump
change. Are they not?
It's chump change. And I guess if it's 6 this year, but that's, we don't know the details, but Ben said in the range of 6, 11, 16 and a half, right? That's exactly what it should look like. It's kind of in the middle, which is, yeah, this is how arbitration is functioning. We're just avoiding the hurtful words and exchanges and all
which
that messy stuff.
Which is important for a guy that we've already thought was having issues with the team.
I understand all that, but I just, like, is this a massive win for the Blue Jays? Did they get anything over Bo? No, they didn't. This is just arbitration being put aside. Hypothetically, would you prefer this deal or 6 years, $120 million? So he's getting paid an average of 10 for 3, 10, 11, 12 for 3 for the next 3 years, or you can have 3 more years and you're paying 20 million
per year. I think it's hard for me to answer that question without knowing what's going on with Vladdy.
Okay, and Vladdy's a big part of it as well. But we've been talking, at the end of the year, we were talking about how, okay, you're paying George Springer all this money, and Hyunjin Ryu is still making money, and Kevin Gausman's still making money. How are you going to make it such that you can suddenly pay Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Clearly, they don't want to do that yet. They want to push it down the road as much as possible, and that this accomplishes that. Mm-hmm. But in 3 years, I don't think we should be surprised if Bo's like, check, please, 2026, I'm going to go get my long-term deal elsewhere.
Okay, and who knows where the team is at that point,
and
too.
And if you signed a deal like the Acuna deal, or the Michael Harris deal, or whatever, where you could keep costs down but pay them more right away, and that might not have been an option because of the Springers of the world and such play for your team right now. However, you could buy up some of those years and prevent him from A, walking out the door, or B, paying him $35 million a year, or whatever it is.
I still think there'd be a good part of our fan base that would be like, whoa, 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 whoa. You just signed Bo to an 8-year contract last night.
Okay, you do that with Vladdy, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Unfortunately, at this point, and this has been the problem for the last couple of years, subtract how I feel about one versus the other. And they shouldn't be a tandem. They're two different players, but we're in a very similar situation with them both, and they're both superstar caliber players. But if you're going to tell me last night on February 7th you signed Bo to an 8-year extension and we still don't know what's going with Vladdy, I think I'd come on here being like, oh, this is a bit, this raises some red flags.
So if you're non-committal with Bo, I would just say don't be surprised if he's non-committal with you. And this gets them playing nice now, 3 years, playing nice. And things can change. Contractually, things can change, I guess. They could come over the top with another deal, and we might not ever get to 2026, or at least the real meaty part of 26. But I just feel like they're still dancing around each other. And I think that's kind of what they have to do with Vladdy and Bo, because we've outlined this. You can't give them the world when you've already have, or at least we don't think, when you already have so much other money and contractual obligation already on the books.
100%.
But if you look at the Leafs, you had 6 years with Marner, 5 years with Matthews. Would have been better if those were 8-year deals. Would have been a lot better.
Okay, but you're also looking at a body of work now that you can evaluate that on. We don't, last year we thought about moving Bo off shortstop.
Yeah, yeah.
Can he play somewhere else for this team? Where is he going to fit?
I agree he's not in that category, but if you look at the Braves, I think there are comparables there, and the Braves were sure about their players, gave them more money right away, but bought up years of service. And I think really that's the difference when looking at how these two teams are being built, or at least how they handled their future superstars.
So yet to find out the exact details on the multi-year deal, the three-year deal, how much it is. I still think that we can pull some, personally, a little bit a more of a win right now at this stat. That could change significantly when we find out more details. Obviously, John Morosi hopefully will be able to give us more of a pulse on this too. And like, arbitration sucks, as we said, but I mean, he would know more about like what the tension was going into this. Is everybody relieved? Is this a win for the Blue Jays? Is this a win for Bobichette? Is it a win for both? Can it be in the Venn diagram of winning?
Is it kind of a nothing burger? Maybe.
All right. So that's 7:30. We'll have John join us then. We'll obviously have our buddy Jeff Merrick at 7 as well. And we have Michael Grange, just the insiders, lined up for you today at 8 a.m. because tomorrow's the day. NBA trade deadline is just over 24 hours to being completed. Nothing really big yesterday, but that just means that it's all waiting for 8:59 when we get off the air today. Okay, so let's talk about LeBron James then.
Let's.
Yesterday, we just teased it a bit. He's coming in this immaculate outfit. He goes with, I think every single person that covers the sport of basketball was in attendance, obviously. He's doing the pregame warm-ups, practicing the hook shot.
The one I saw was a complete brick, too.
Well, he's hilarious. And I just thought, now this guy is going to script out this moment. He's going to do the Kareem hook shot.
And it's kind of LeBron-esque. Like, he's kind of a corny dude.
And I kind of was watching, like, oh, my God, this is so cheesy. And I said, is there any other way, though?
What?
Like, it's going
another
to be.
Another way?
No, like, for him. Like, he was just going
to
go there.
The hook shot?
No, but I mean, he was going to go in there and try to script this perfect Netflix movie.
Sure.
It didn't happen exactly that way. He wears the old school headband, though. He comes in with this pair of headphones on, just like what we're wearing, but it's got the number of points written on the top. Yeah, see, eye roll. I'm like, come on. Like, it's just like, don't be so icky, but it's LeBron James. Like, that's how he does it. All his friends and family there. Okay, so when the moment happens, and you're going to see this if you open up Twitter, they've done a cross-reference of the shot of LeBron James when he beats this record, right? And what's the camera shot of behind the scenes of, is it someone winning? Is it the championship clutching moment with the photo? Either two photos, the cell phones and the no cell phones?
Oh, was it Michael Jordan?
Is it Michael? But it was him clinching.
I think it was against
shot,
Utah.
Right?
I'm not really sure. But yeah, a famous Michael Jordan photo.
Okay, so it's the photo of the two of them, and everyone's like, look at the difference. Everyone living in the moment with their no cell phones, and then the shot last night is every single person with their cell phone up. That's like part of where we're going to get to the discussion of like, are we living in the best era of sports? Whatever. Mm. But these are the things that are coming out when you look at, like, you click on LeBron James.
Wait, do the cell phones offend you?
No, because it's 2023. Everybody has a cell phone. I mean,
well,
you're
why,
telling
why
me if you were
why
there.
Why wouldn't you want to document the moment?
And that's
for
the thing. And I think people are so quick to be like, oh my God, everyone just lives through social media. It's like, if you were at this game, you wouldn't have taken your phone out to take a photo of this moment.
Well, I will say, there's nothing worse on Instagram than like scenes from a concert or scenes from like a hockey game. Like
you're like, not going to.
You didn't
get a better shot.
You didn't give me anything that like I'm not going to see on the broadcast or whatever. And the concert ones are the absolute worst because you get nothing from it. But people want to show you what they're doing, and that's all fine. But if you were there, why would you not want a piece of history that you can contribute in your way to? Like him hitting the shot, you having that video forever, especially if you're that close. Mm-hmm. That's very, very cool.
Anyway, and I just don't have a hot take about it this morning.
I also don't think you're not watching the game if you're and not watching the moment. You might be watching through your phone, but I'd probably just hold it up and also be watching him. Mm-hmm. And maybe the shot isn't perfect for that reason, but I'm not going to begrudge anyone that's filming LeBron James beat an all-time record that many people didn't think ever would be broken. I'm kind of okay with it.
Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. That's like, that's the thing this morning. It's like, look at our social era. Nobody was living in the moment. It's like, you would have done the same thing. You also jumped to Twitter to start to argue with people. So
that's
you're also jumping to social media. Anyway, that's not point. The major point of it is that he did get his history making shot, and then only got 2 points in the fourth quarter, and they lost.
Yeah, he kind of packed it in. That's so, kind of the LeBron Lakers era, though.
That's what I'm thinking is like, and JD's spicy takes. We know that, but he had a good tweet that I wanted to read because I thought that this was an interesting take. Lakers needed that win against a Thunder team that lost by 30 last night. Braun with a 2-point no-show fourth, gassed after chasing the record and left early with a phantom injury. No one will remember that, but it happened. No chance MJ loses this game. Just saying.
I mean, that's is that was that part of the tweet or is that your commentary?
Yeah, that was threaded.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, like, part of the LeBron thing is it's about LeBron, right? And that game was all about LeBron James. And again, the same way I'm okay with cameras, I'm kind of okay with LeBron James kind of realizing it was his moment and that the Lakers are not exactly, I mean, they're trying. The Hachimura deal, I think they're trying to get better. Clearly, they struck out on Kyrie. I think they want to try to make something this season. But that night was not about being the Thunder, clearly, or the result probably would have been somewhat different. It was about LeBron James making sure that the 4,000 people from Akron and every media member and every important basketball person in attendance witnessed a record. And sometimes
and they did.
Individual accomplishment oversees like the what happens through 82 games. Mm-hmm. That happens, I guess, more often than not with LeBron than anyone else, but that's because LeBron is actually accomplishing things that no one else could potentially even dream of. So I guess that's kind of the give and take. I think that's always going to be part of the LeBron story, but are we like quibbling with how big of a winner he is in his career? I don't really think we can do that.
No, I thought it was funny. The AD stuff is what I wanted to bring up as well. So there's videos, obviously, of every angle because all we do is live on our phones. And there's a video of LeBron breaking this record.
Well, I do have a problem with the person videoing AD while that record is
up. Hey, you know, I mean,
I guess it paid off for them, but like the action and the game-winning or game-winning, the record-breaking bucket is like beyond.
So you can see in the foreground, AD is sitting there on the bench and like kind of walking around, and in the background you hear, okay, it's happening. Like there's like the and you know LeBron's about to hit this shot, like, you know where this, we're at in the game. He hits it, the crowd erupts, and AD doesn't even clap. Like,
doesn't
he's
really
sitting
flinch.
There. He doesn't like even, like, acknowledge the moment. And
like,
I thought,
if you're on a hockey bench, if everyone's standing and you're sitting, you can't see anything. It was, like, akin to that, where he's like, he didn't really watch what happened.
And I think it's an interesting look into what might be going on with this team. And last night was all about LeBron James. And
maybe AD wants to win basketball games.
And maybe AD wants to win basketball games. Yeah. And this deadline is really huge for the Lakers. You missed out on Kyrie. Obviously, we saw LeBron emo tweeting about that. You have the night for LeBron James last night, and that's the story. But this team still is chasing something, and the trade deadline is tomorrow, and nothing's going on. And there's players on your team that are playing for more than just LeBron James. And maybe that's what we saw with AD, and maybe that's a little bit of an insight into, okay, who cares? Like, who cares? Sorry. Yeah, everybody cares. But we still lost the game, and that was a game we must win. And, like, what are we doing right now? And what are the Lakers doing right now, I think, is a really big question mark. Now that he's hit his points, like, what are you doing today and tomorrow at the trade deadline? Are you going to secure some support for LeBron James, or is this season now done because he hit his records?
Lakers are third to last from the bottom in the Western Conference, just two games out of a play.
But that's what I'm saying. The Western Conference is so tight. Like,
yeah, they're there, but they got to start winning basketball games.
Right.
They're 55 games into the season, meaning they have 27 left. I mean, it's getting to the point where they have to win, and for at least one night, a record did supersede.
So maybe that's done now.
What should be the most important thing?
And, like, let's go all in tomorrow at the trade deadline? I don't know.
I still think there has to be a move, because if we're talking, and we're going to talk about the legacy of LeBron and other things that sort of run adjacent to that, but they are, and he is actively having his final seasons kind of wasted here. As long as Russell Westbrook is soaking up, what is it, $44 million? Around $40 million. Like, the possibility or the chance for them to actually have success is slim. And they do have AD, and they've got some talent on that roster, and they've got LeBron James, but they don't have enough to compete. And that's evidenced
and
by the
just,
fact that they're third from the bottom.
And they put two
the
first-round picks on the table, right?
Yeah.
And they put,
well, you have to. Because
right,
you have
so,
to try to get something
they,
out of the final years of LeBron
something.
James.
So maybe the fact that this is done, this whatever
the
story
is done,
let's
get going.
They know what the
clock is. Bronny James comes in the NBA, what, a couple years? They know until that point they have LeBron James.
That's right.
You would assume. He's probably not going to uproot his family at this point in his career, with the one son chasing NBA and the other ones, you know,
but
living and growing up in L.A.
Whoever drafts little Bronny,
that's what I mean. The Lakers have until then, because he's going to go and play with his kid, unless the Lakers draft him. So they've got to be aggressive. But they also got to win basketball games. So right. I guess it's good that this is done for AD's sake and the entire Lakers fan base's sake.
Okay, so LeBron James, I don't know if you're ready to say he's the GOAT or not. I think that's still...
Well, I think JD's point is well made.
It's the MJ versus LeBron story still.
MJ doesn't lose that game is kind of like, succinctly put, if you want to like build and stand by one, make an argument, MJ doesn't lose that game is a pretty good one and one I can kind of get behind.
Something to ponder. Okay, but when we talk about LeBron James, there's been many eras of LeBron James, which we've been fortunate to live through and to experience and maybe cover or be a fan of. The OG Cavs era, the Big Three era in Miami, coming home to Cleveland era, and then his latest chapter in Hollywood era.
I know which one's the least successful. Well, no, I guess he can't say that for certain because he did win an NBA title.
Coming home to Hollywood.
But the coming home to Hollywood is certainly the, I'll say, the least interesting.
Okay, so your favorite era of LeBron James.
It's easy. I'll let you go first, but I think it's easy.
Easy?
Yeah.
Mine's the Heat LeBron.
Really? Okay, it's not easy then.
Interesting.
You're into villains. That's his villain.
Hell yeah, I'm into villains.
Okay.
And so not only was this like an extremely successful era for LeBron James, it was peak villain. It was the decision. It was the Big Three. Won two NBA titles, two finals MVPs, two MVPs, four all-star teams. But this is when he was a freak of nature, the most unstoppable player in the league. He got over that hump and he won. He learned how to like block out the media noise. He wins his first two NBA titles. It's really when you started to see the LeBron that was promised as the LeBron James, maybe with the Cavs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a young person in that era, like I had just finished, I was watching him in high school. Like that's kind of when I really got into who were the stars of the sports that I love. I was obviously a little younger during the Cavs era when he first came into the NBA. So I think at that point, it started to resonate more with me. If this guy is going to be a star while I'm growing up into a fan of the sport, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was a hockey kid my whole life growing up. I didn't really have too much time for basketball until I got to a point where I was able to really focus in on more than one. And LeBron James at that point was like maybe not fun to cheer for, and that's okay, but he was such an impactful part of my upbringing into watching basketball. And it was during his time in Miami that I was like, this guy is going to be an absolute force. And I just hadn't really given it as much attention and time when he was in his previous era with the Cavs than I did. And then I followed this journey even more so. So for me, it is the Heat LeBron. It is everything that he got to at that point and everything he won. And it started this... For me, this legacy of who LeBron James is today was watching him when he played for the Heat.
I would say the 4 years he spent in Miami were probably the most like visceral chapter for mm-hmm. me because I hate watched LeBron James. I was not a fan of the Miami Heat. I wanted everyone who came into was in competition with them during the postseasons to beat LeBron mm-hmm. James. I think part of it was the Chris Bosh thing. Part of it was the decision. Part of it was everything that went into those three coming together on stage, not one, not two, all that stuff. Like, that bothered me. That irked me. I didn't like it at all. I was definitely cheering against the Miami Heat his entire tenure. But it changed for me when he went back to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when he was in Cleveland the second time, I think that was probably the best 4 years of basketball, at least from an enjoyable standpoint, league-wide for me, ever. The chapters... In each chapter versus the Golden State Warriors, the best player ever versus the best team that I've ever seen, that was basketball at its very best and its finest. And it's part of the LeBron James story, I think, is that we're going to get into like our lifetime athletes, and LeBron perfectly segues into that. But his story was more of failure than a lot of other MJ. More winning.
Could be like he lost six championships is always going to be part of LeBron's
MJ always won. Brady just retired. Brady won more often than not. LeBron got there over and over and over again and did taste defeat more than I think he won. And him going up against those Golden State Warriors teams, in a team that was historic and impossible to beat, and him pulling off the three to one coming back, winning that series, mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't think basketball was ever better than in that precise moment of time. And it's because LeBron James beat a team like the Golden State Warriors. Now, they lost to Golden State a couple times, but those chapters, every year, them getting back to that point where they played each other, I just don't think basketball was ever more enjoyable in my lifetime. And I was cheering for LeBron James in those moments. So the most enjoyable chapter of his career for me, going back to Cleveland, getting that championship for Cleveland, and going head-to-head with the Golden State Warriors.
Would you say that this latest chapter, you said, was least enjoyable for you?
100%.
I think least enjoyable in terms of, okay, like...
Well, it's kind of, it's a waste. Yeah, he won. It's like,
but
so
it's been
easy.
Most enjoyable for content and for,
I don't think so.
For feeling like you're really getting to know LeBron at this point.
I guess, but like there's some things you don't maybe want to know.
Oh, that's, then that enjoyable also means like you can poke fun and you can have like social media seeing LeBron James for the corniness that he is has been somewhat enjoyable, has it not been?
I guess so, but I prefer him to actually use these years to try and chase MJ down. And if he played for good teams, if he was not around dysfunctional or in a dysfunctional organization, if he was maybe less in control at the wheel, making decisions or at least influencing decisions, just being the basketball player who knew what was needed, where the situation was most advantageous for him. Like, I think he could have got more out of his career if he didn't go to LA. But again, I get the lure. I get
but
the
LeBron
lifestyle.
But LeBron not in LA wouldn't have been as fun.
Wearing a Lakers jersey
That's
and becoming
right.
the all-time point getter in the NBA. Like, it all kind of makes sense.
It kind of had to end that way, though,
for the
I
last
think,
chapter
you know?
Of his career. It does.
It's the bookend. We got some clips to play, obviously, from last night. We're going to have the discussion if LeBron is the GOAT for, I think, quite a while here. It's not time to crown him that for me. But here's LeBron last night being asked or talking about if he's the GOAT.
It's great barbershop talk.
You know, I want to hear you say
listen,
it,
big
Bron,
fella,
Bron.
Listen, big fella.
I want to hear you say it, Bron.
Me personally,
say it, Bron.
Say it with your chest, Bron. I'm going to take myself against anybody that's ever played this game. You know, but everyone's going to have their favorite. Everyone's going to, you know, decide who their favorite is. But I know what I've brought to the table. I know what I bring to the table every single night and what I can do out on this floor. So, you know, I always feel like I'm the best to ever play this game, but, you know, there's so many other great ones, and I'm happy to just be a part of their journey.
At least he's humble.
Impossible to be humble if you're LeBron James.
I'm just teasing a bit. He just topped the all-time scoring list. Like, I don't think he's going to not make it about himself. The whole night was about himself, but great barbershop talk is what he said, and we're going to have this, I'm sure, on sports radio for the next couple of years until he officially hangs him up, but... There's differences between him and MJ, and it's always going to be that way.
And I think that perfectly segues into what we want to talk next, and that's like, that is the era of sports we live in right now, because you kind of laid it out. You weren't paying attention necessarily to LeBron James the way you do now until he got to Miami. I do remember the first stay in Cleveland. I remember the really bad teams he dragged a long way in the playoffs. I do remember those, but I think 2010 is a pretty like strong earmark for both of us in terms of our lifetime of sports, our era of sports, and how good and how privileged we are to have watched sports in our era for the last 13 years. Because I agree with JD's tweet. Michael Jordan seems like the more fierce basketball player, the one who cared more about winning and being better than those on the floor, not better than those in the record book. And I think that's an important distinction. But I don't remember Michael Jordan's career like I remember LeBron James' career. So it's kind of hard to separate those two. But I do know what happened since 2010. And I'm pretty confident saying that we have lived in the greatest era of sports, bar none. Let me read to you what we've seen since 2010. We've seen the LeBron James story. We've seen four championships for him. We saw the chapters against the Warriors, which I laid out. Tom Brady, who just retired. Four Super Bowls, went to two more. Just in the 2010s, of course, he won more Super Bowls. But since 2010, that's what he's accomplished. Usain Bolt, 6-0 in Olympic Games, 8-0 overall, but didn't lose a race since 2010 on the Olympic stage. We got the Messi-Ronaldo tug of war for best ever. Ronaldo wins a Euro. Messi just wins a World Cup. Federer, Djokovic, Nadal combined for 41 Grand Slams together since 2010. Serena won 12 Grand Slam titles since 2010. We got Sid and Ovi ushering in the new era of NHL hockey, setting records, winning Stanley Cups between them. Our girl, Marie-Philippe Poulin, 3 game-winning goals at the Olympic Games. All of this has happened over the last 13 years. Best ever players and performers have made their legacy over the last 13 years. And I'm thinking about, okay, what was the previous 13 years look like? Yeah, there's some Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. That's when he made his legend within those 13 years. But I don't think it compare to what we've seen since 2010 and the amazing performances sports-wide. I feel like we've been living and working in the most privileged era of sports watching.
And for me, I also think 2010 is a good starting point for that because that's when the Vancouver Olympics were. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being so pivotal for Canadians and for myself as a hockey fan especially. And having that moment start this journey, what you said, in Canada, the Olympics for me are like probably my favorite indicator of where we're at in sports.
Well, that's when the thinking sort of changed in Canada too. It was like, oh, we're the nice people. We're the nice people that show up the Olympics. And all of a sudden in Vancouver, it's like we had a little edge and we were winning all of a sudden and we liked the feeling of winning and we kind of dominated and showed
it's
that
we could. It's not that Canada came on the map, but we could start to have some dominating performances.
And we didn't have to have a smile on our face at all times. Like we could act like Michael Jordan at times. I think that showed something to Canadians and kind of changed the way we thought. But I do think this is way beyond Canada. And I would have included Christine Sinclair on that list.
For sure.
But like globally, I don't know if it's the same impact. But we've had great performances as from our athletes over the last 13 years. But we're talking about best evers. People that transcended the game. People that compare to the greats that we didn't witness as close in firsthand. What we've seen over the last 13 years is truly remarkable. And the door is sort of closing on what we know and what we've have known. With Brady walking out the door, LeBron on his final legs, Federer already out the door.
Serena retiring, Sid and Ovi
in their last kind of chapters here. Like there is an era that's kind of being ushered out at this moment. And I wonder where we're going next and who's going to carry that sort of legacy and try to match what we've have seen over the last couple of years.
And I only brought up the Olympic thing because I was just going to say, like, that's for me also when it started in 2010, because that's like where I bookend the beginning of a new, 2010 is the beginning of a new decade as well, but that's okay. That's really when I started to also start evaluating like the era of sports that we're in. I will say a lot of this, I think, has to do with us taking advancements in society too. Like we have way better training. We have way better health and nutrition. We are also way more dialed in on social media when we start to compare eras. I don't think in 1980, we were trying to compare the GOAT discussion. I don't think we were trying to look back and evaluate the difference between a 1950s basketball team and a 1980s basketball team. I think right now the state of the world we live in is what's very comparative. Like we are always looking back. Like, are we living in the best moment of sports? Well, here's all the reasons we are. Here's all the advancements that people are breaking records all the time. Well, I think we have to also qualify the fact that we are living in a society and a state of athletic success because we have also taken a lot of advancements as the way the players train and the way is it the way that we can take care of our bodies, et cetera, et cetera. Not to discredit anything, but it's just like we are also moving to a part where like I think we're gonna find ways that players get better and better. But in this little meshing that we're in right now, this decade or this 13 years, so much has evolved. And we've got to see players also continue with that journey. So I think it's interesting to look back like, 19, whatever. We always say, well, was Gretzky really the GOAT if he played hockey against goaltenders with pads made out of newspaper, right?
Every year, it should be the best it's ever been, right?
In terms of
technology and everything moving on a trajectory. I do think it has a better impact on some sports than others, though. Like, I don't think necessarily that baseball has benefited from everything being so much better,
maybe,
right?
Maybe steroids.
Because, well, maybe that's the problem. There's a little blip in the trajectory and things were really good for a second there, but artificially good. But I think it's kind of the pitching. Like the pitching is too good and the tactics are too good and the strategy is too good that it kind of takes from the game a little bit.
And the balls are juiced.
And I guess you could like prefer the 80s hockey where it's, you know, fights and scraps and line brawls and Wayne Gretzky dominating and scoring a million goals. But it was only that way, at least with Gretzky, and I don't want to diminish Gretzky whatsoever, but it was that way with the best players in the league then, because there was such a chasm between the best players and the worst players and the goaltenders and everything that went into it. Now everyone, every spot in the roster is saturated, and you're trying to, the best players in the world, and everyone
the floor
is,
has
everyone,
risen.
Yeah, the floor has risen. Everyone's trained the right way, and everyone is really, really good, and it's hard to separate yourself. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's why a guy like Connor McDavid is so extraordinary, that he can look different in a league where everyone has the optimal training and is put in the optimal situations and can be their best selves as an athlete. So it is special when people stand out now, I think more than before, because of what what you outlined there, is that the floor certainly has risen.
I think this is a great discussion for our listeners at 590-590. I guess a couple questions to ponder. Is this the best era of sports that we're living through right now? This 2010 onwards, you can use whatever, you know, evaluation of time that you'd like, but what we lay out with LeBron, with Brady, with Messi, Ronaldo, Federer, Nadal, Sinclair, Serena, Djokovic, Sid, Ovi, Marie-Philippe Poulin, like, go through the people that have outlined this decade, and is this the best that we're seeing? Like, we have listeners that are older than us, mm-hmm. and they might say, hell no, it was the 90s. Like, I would love to know, because I wasn't alive. So send that in at 590-590. Secondly, watching last night and trying to evaluate on LeBron James, has he taken GOAT status for you? Is he ever going to? What's that LeBron era that you look back on the most favorably, or maybe the era that really got you hooked on LeBron James? There's a couple different options for that. What is it for you? Was Big Three era for me in Miami? Was the coming home era for Justin in Cleveland? Maybe you're really fond of him in Hollywood right now. Maybe you love the corny LeBron. Like, that's fine.
I think one more point, and it's pertains strictly to LeBron on the advancements of the game and how things have changed. Kareem, I heard on the radio coming in this morning, hit 1 3-pointer in his career. So he set this record. Set this record.
I did not know that.
Exclusively.
That's insane. Without
that shot. And LeBron, I think, excuse me, has hit 2,200, if I'm remembering correctly, based on this morning.
Oh, my God. One of them.
So the efficiency, I don't even want to say efficiency. It might be way more shots. But Kareem set that record in a completely different era. He set that record when the game was played, when the game was different. Mm-hmm. It was a different game back then than it is now. And, like, I don't know. Is there going to be a 4-point line one day? I don't know. I don't think so. But, like, will it change, or will any sport change in a way where it's easier for players to put up points and numbers and statistics? Does the NHL go to 4-on-4 one day and all of a sudden every game is 10-9? Probably not. But the game changed for LeBron James to help him get that record. And when we're thinking about modernized game and how things have changed and helped the current era, at least LeBron James does have a pretty obvious way that can help define and explain his success and why he was able to pass that record.
Speaking of Kareem and LeBron, obviously Kareem's there at the game. It was really cool. Like, I know we were kind of like tongue-in-cheek about the LeBron James night, but if you're going to do it, you do it right. Like last night, I did think about it for a second. What if he didn't hit it last night? Is everybody going to Thursday's game? Are they replaying all of these? Like, the pregame stuff was hilarious, because I started thinking, actually, I watched for the first little bit and he didn't have a point for, I don't know, 10 minutes or something.
Really?
Like, he didn't come out glaring at the start. Okay. And I was like, oh no, he's not getting it. And then I thought, is everybody going to like buy a ticket for Thursday? Are they going to replay all these montages? And then he ends up getting, but obviously with Kareem being there, he's a part
of, would have been so pissed.
Yeah. He's a part of the discussion. Here's a great audio clip. Kareem talking about what LeBron's legacy is.
LeBron's career is one of, someone who planned to dominate this game. He got out of high school. He had the size and the talent to step right into the NBA, and he immediately started to have his effect. And, you know, it's gone for almost 20 years now. So I think that, you know, you got to give him credit for just the way that he planned to last and to dominate. And he led his team he led teams to 3 world championships. And they didn't get there because of someone else, and LeBron tagged along. LeBron led them. You know, he has that indefinable essence that they call leadership.
Indefinable essence that they call leadership.
Mm.
All right. We're going to keep talking about this, I'm sure. For the rest of the weekend, onwards with LeBron James' legacy. Thursday, they're back in action, and they play the Milwaukee Bucks, and that is the trade deadline. So are the Lakers going to focus on the team now? You know what I also thought was funny? You know how last, I think it was 2 weeks ago on the A-List, I brought up the fact that LeBron James had never been used in a post-game loss graphic, remember?
Right.
Their Twitter feed had never posted LeBron James in any of their score graphics.
Had to be this one, though. They didn't put the score up.
They didn't even post the post-game score graphic.
I mean, I don't blame them.
Well, I just think, you know, you're reporting the news, and they did post the halftime score when they were down 10. And then the rest of their feed is just LeBron James. I don't blame them, but the discussion from last week was he's never been in a post-game loss graphic. That would have been the night to do it. They just didn't even do it. All right, let's take a break because we have the A-List on the other side. We've got a full day of insiders. Jeff Merrick at 7. John Morosi to talk about Bo Bichette at 7:30. Michael Grange, we're one day away from the trade deadline, joining us at 8 o'clock. That's all to look forward to. And we're giving away more stuff today. Whew. All we do here is give, give, give. The A-List is next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, here's a fun one. Aaron Rodgers. Oh, boy. So he's doing his own the decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Aaron Rodgers going to go? What's next for him? He's known for a different path in life. He likes to forage his own way.
It's a bit eccentric. It's a bit out there.
This is certainly
different bird
aligned with that. So he was on the Pat McAfee show, I believe yesterday or the day before, and mentions that he's going on a, quote, darkness retreat in a couple weeks. So it's 4 days in complete darkness, just himself in a little house. He's got a number of friends who have done it and have had profound experiences. He expects to have a decision on his next part of his career after that. He says there are two slots where food can be dropped in. And if somebody can't handle the 4 days, they're allowed to leave. No music, no one else, just you, the darkness, and your thoughts.
I'm a little, like, concerned about, like, I want him to keep playing because I don't know what's going to happen if he stops playing. Like, what is Aaron Rodgers going to do when he stops
darkness
playing?
Darkness retreats.
When something is not consuming his time, we get into this stuff. And I get, like, I know, people have to, like, have reflective journeys and spiritual things help others. And I don't know, what, did he do ayahuasca? And that's, like, is that something he wants to do?
Yes, apparently this trip won't feature the use of
that. So no psychedelics this time, but, like,
imagine taking that while you're in a dark room by yourself in the woods.
Well, I feel like it would, I don't feel like the ayahuasca setting is much different than that,
scary.
Other than darkness. I think old Aaron is going to get himself in a little bit of trouble when he's done playing. So the longer the better, probably.
So what do you think happens in the darkness retreat? He's like, darkness, the Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
This, like, he just opens his eyes and it's like darkness. It's the Raiders.
It's what images come into his head, because if it's exclusively darkness, he will see something. He'll see the light. He'll see maybe the silver and black.
That's what
of
I
the
mean.
Vegas Raiders.
This is a tiptoeing just to be a Raider.
Maybe he'll see Davante Adams.
Woo! pops out.
Yeah.
Anyway, very cool, Aaron Rodgers. Best of luck.
Very cool.
I wonder how you, like, find your way to the bathroom in there, just like your hands up on the wall and feel something.
There's
move.
Probably no bathroom, if we're being honest.
Oh, Justin, 4 days?
I'm just saying.
Yuck.
I think that's probably one of the big yuck factors of the ayahuasca trip.
So say, how long do you think?
I don't know if the bathroom is necessarily 5-star.
How long do you think you could go on this retreat for?
Like, to just be in the dark?
Like the same thing he's doing. 2 days? 4 days?
No. I'd go nuts.
I think I could get through 36 hours.
See, these things scare me because, like, you could come out a different person.
I think that's the point.
But, like, I don't know. Like, don't you want to, unless you're, like, really unhappy with your life, aren't you worried that things will fundamentally change in, like, a bad way?
Maybe you just,
like,
want to be closer
with the ayahuasca,
to in touch
because
with who
it's
you,
like,
are.
But it's like,
get the drugs out of it. Like, him just going in this dark room.
But this is meant to, like, simulate, hey, clarity, right?
Yeah, but
so what if clarity is something that is not necessarily all that welcoming or appetizing or palatable or whatever? Just see a therapist, Aaron.
So you don't think you could do this?
No,
you're scared
I don't want to.
You're scared about learning about yourself.
I step into the darkness every night for like 4 hours because I get up really early.
Well, I don't know. Send in 590-590. How long could you do the darkness retreat? What would you be scared about
finding?
You think
you could do that?
Yeah, I think I could do it for 36 hours. That's our next show bet. Our next show bet. Ailish goes into a dark room for 36 hours.
You can barely sit still. And there's no way. No way.
Wow, you have no faith in me.
I have a better chance because I just sleep.
You don't think that I could just
zonk
out?
You'd get bored.
I would be so introspective. I'd come back here and I'd have the most calm takes. I'd be like, it doesn't matter, Justin. Yeah. In the end, we are all just atoms on this earth.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, let's take a break because we got Jeff Merrick on the other side. We're going to talk through his, his thoughts on the All-Star
His game. All-Star appearance, let's get that. Walking through the sand with...
We're almost done talking about the All-Star game. It's our last time we're talking about it.
Mercifully.
But we have to talk about designated survivor. This got me really fired up. I'm kind of like a nerd for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's like a big meshing of some craziness in the NHL Players Association and designated survivor, the U.S. political system. Stay tuned. That's next on the other side of the break. Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish.